Christians get so hung up and have so much fear about doing the wrong thing that they end up not doing anything. From a young age, I knew that God was calling me to be involved with music. I didn't know what that meant at the time. Yes, I have these desires to be in a band and go do things, but I'm just gonna delight myself in God and prioritize relationship with Him. It was like me on my face before God saying, like, yeah, you brought me here. This is just His story. Like, I'm along for the ride. You got to show up, God. You look around at each other, the other people in the band, and you ask, like, should we still be doing this? Like, this is really hard and exhausting.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, welcome everybody. It is so good to be with you today. And before we get started with our conversation, I want to ask you a favor. If you could rate and review Made to Advance, that would be a big help to our team. It helps us get the word out about the podcast. It helps us reach more people, bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. And it's also just a straight up encouragement to our team. So please rate and review us. And also, if you got any thoughts you want to share, we've got an email. It's mta@engedichurch.com, mta@engedichurch.com. We would absolutely love to hear from you. But today I have Ben Kasica with me. And Ben is a filmmaker and producer with a passion for creating purposeful stories in film and television. After spending 10 years as the lead guitarist for Skillet and selling over 10 million records, Ben launched Skies Fall, a production and entertainment company that has helped Fortune 500 companies and many others get their message out. Ben's latest project is the feature film Homestead, which I am excited to talk with him about today. And so I want to say welcome to the show, Ben. It's great to have you.
Thank you, man. Good to be here. Excited for it.
And you're joining us from LA.
I'm in LA, or just outside LA, yeah, in Thousand Oaks. So,
well, I can promise you that as whatever great temperatures you might be having now, they're the same in West Michigan right now. The weather is perfect here. So,
Is it? I haven't looked lately.
I'm joking. Hey, I've got a question for you. This is just a fun question I wanted to ask. So obviously the Skillet days are behind you and all that, but I am curious, now that you're kind of out of the professional musician band mode, do you get your guitar out much and jam, or is it like, not so much anymore?
You know, I haven't in a while, but I just reorganized my office and I put my guitar right here next to me. I haven't touched it yet. So,
okay.
But yeah, I don't do it too much. I got involved. I still songwrite. So I do worship songwriting with some friends if we do writing rooms and things like that. And then over COVID, I helped launch a record label called Tribal Records.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a whole thing with Maverick City Music. So I got more involved with the business side, but I love worship music. I love music. It's a huge part of my life. But I just haven't, I don't really get out and jam. It's not really something I do anymore, which is sad. I feel like fans are disappointed by that.
Did you enjoy the stage part of it? I mean, some artists, they love writing. They love that aspect of creating with the band, and the actual like stage time is, it's part of it, but it's not as their first love. And others, it's just the opposite. They love being in front of the crowd and all that. What's, for you, do you miss that side of it?
The energy of a show when you're about to go out and play for 10,000 people or 20,000 people is pretty incredible, to be honest. It's fun. But my favorite part about being in the band was traveling, not necessarily the shows, but every day you're in a new place, there's new coffee shops, new towns, etc. And then the studio was kind of my favorite thing, to be honest. That was where it's because you're just endlessly creating, experimenting, trying things, and then stuff works, stuff doesn't. But fast forward 6 months, a year, people are listening to the song on the radio that you created in that studio. That's a cool thing as a creative. It's pretty satisfying.
Totally. What's going on with Tribal these days? We it's funny. Our team here at Engedi just signed a distribution deal with Capitol. But I definitely have paid attention to Tribal over the years, and of course, particularly because of Mav City. But what's new with Tribal these days?
I'm not as involved, to be honest. My friend Tony Brown, he's the one that started that and Maverick City, and so I was more coming in as a creative director and kind of a business mentor friend. But they're still releasing albums and producing things. My friend's not involved as much now, so I've kind of back down as well, but they're constantly signing new artists, using social media to really find a lot of new talent.
Yeah, totally.
And so, yeah, they're busy at work, doing what they do.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, hey, I'd love to jump into your story. I think that your background and your journey is utterly fascinating, and I know that our listeners will as well. So let's just kind of start out at the beginning, if we could, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about your growing up. You had a unique growing up experience, and that led to a unique career. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very abnormal life and even childhood. I remember being a young kid, wishing that I had a normal life, but my parents are just abnormal in the best way possible. So the two kind of pillars for me growing up was excellence in the arts. So my parents were, my dad went to Juilliard. He played in the St. Louis Symphony as a principal percussionist. So one of the top 50 percussionists, you know, of all time type of thing. And then my mom played flute in orchestras as well. So I grew up around, this is, you know, excellence in the art. This is when you're the best at something, this is the platform and the rooms that you can get into. And so I saw that and I saw what it took to do that. And then on the other side of it, the other pillar was really just listening to the Holy Spirit, being led by God. My parents are the radical Jesus people. So if they were on here by the end of this, you know, podcast, they would pray for you and you'd probably be, you know, rocked by God in some kind of way. And so very foundational to a kid that's, you know, wanting to do something that matters and is meaningful in life. So from a young age, I knew that God was calling me to be involved with music. I didn't know what that meant at the time. The path for me was becoming excellent at an instrument. I started playing guitar at 12. I started with classical guitar, then acoustic, and then got into electric. And well, just practiced 3 or 4 hours a day, which for somebody that age was pretty abnormal. Wow. But I knew that it would eventually open a door for me. And on a spiritual note, you know, one of my life verses is Psalm 37:4. And it says, delight yourself in God and he'll give you the desires of your heart. And so I took that to heart even as a young teenager. And I said, okay, you know, yes, I have these desires to be in a band and go do things, but I'm just going to delight myself in God. I'm going to choose to find delight and prioritize, you know, relationship with him over the desires of, I want to be in a band or I want to do cool things in life. And pretty quickly into that, you know, I had the opportunity to try out for Skillet. At the time, Skillet was a smaller Christian band signed to a tiny record label. I was a huge fan of theirs. I, you know, was 12 years old going to their shows, 13 years old. And so, so when I had the opportunity to try out, it was a very kind of a weird thing that I'm like, only God could have orchestrated this. And I feel like this is going to happen. And so I was 16, I was still in high school, tried out. And then literally 2 weeks later, I was on tour. And I think our first month was like 25 shows in 30 days.
Wow.
And then at the time we were playing like 200 shows a year. It was pretty nonstop, to be honest. And so it was a pretty wild experience. And we, you know, at the time it was a small Christian band. We ended up getting signed into Atlantic Records and kind of transitioning, crossing over, as they say, into the mainstream world, and got to experience, you know, the mainstream rock world, which was a very dark place. But we really became a light in that place. Some of my favorite memories were literally doing worship songs at the, you know, the darkest rock shows you could imagine. And everyone's drunk and high and very scandalous, dressed people. And then here we are, you know, singing a song that's like very clearly a worship song, and people are getting wrecked by God. And that was a really, really cool thing to experience, you know. So I've not had a normal life. I joined when I was 16, did it for about 10 and a half years. And during that time, you know, started falling in love with other types of media as well. And so got, you know, a little video camera and was editing little video clips and doing what we call the video podcast, but it was more like a vlog type of thing. And and fell in love with creating and storytelling and started a company called Skies Fall that ultimately was, you know, the company that I run now. But we were doing music and producing. It was kind of just all things media. And we were like, how do we do this at a high level? Cause I knew at some point I didn't want to be in the band. Like as great as it was, you know, I toured for 10 years, and after 10 years of touring, it's like, okay, I'm going to see what else there is in life.
Right.
It can be a lonely place being on tour for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, going back to a little bit of your childhood. So you've got these parents who are these, particularly your dad, but both just accomplished musicians. And yet they're also these passionate Jesus followers. They're very tuned in to the Holy Spirit's voice. I know you were homeschooled, so there's that angle too. Mm-hmm. Did your parents ever talk about, and did you say that he played in the San Francisco Orchestra, was it?
St. Louis.
Symphony? St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Did they ever talk about feeling out of step with culture or like different, or was it like, no, they're musicians, they can kind of just flow in the super unique way? And you know, it just it strikes me that there were probably a lot of people around them that were like them, or maybe there were, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were okay with being different. You know, they were kind of in the hippie Jesus people movement of things, and so they were, you know, they were fine being different. And I think they treated it like it was normal. Like all my friends, their parents were like, you know, doctors, lawyers and plumbers and whatever. And, you know, and during the day, my parents were just practicing their instruments like loudly in the house. You know, if, you know, friends would stay over and Saturday morning at 7 a.m., it was like you hear a drum set, you know, being played very loudly. And, you know, and then they'd work at night, right? Like they'd go out and leave at 6 p.m. and go play a show downtown St. Louis. And then, and so it was just a different, it was normal to me, but different for sure. But I really think that set the foundation for leaving at such a young age and going to play in a band on tour. I don't think it would have been really jarring for me, but it felt like a natural progression having grown up the way that I did.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did, when you look back at, being homeschooled during those years, do you think the experience of being homeschooled affected much of the trajectory of your life and career? Or is it like, no, I just happened to get my education in a less common way?
Looking back, it was essential for me. It was funny. I did a podcast recently that was all about like alternative education. And, man, it was amazing. Like the fact that I left home and like really became like a full-time, you know, career person at 16, that would have not been possible had I been in traditional school. And even being skilled on the guitar at a level that could play professionally probably wouldn't have happened had I been in school. And so I remember, you know, you start school, whatever time, 8 a.m. in the morning. And by 11 a.m., 11:30, I was done for the day. Like I did all the classes and all the homework and all the things. And then I had time to go pursue other things. The big lesson my parents taught me was how to learn. So whether that's with music or whether that's, you know, eventually I got into film and it's, I'm willing to just like, you know, full steam ahead, go try things and experiment. Yeah. And I think I learned that when I was being homeschooled by the, okay, it's noon, I'm bored. And my parents are like, well, go find something to do and go figure out things. And that's what I did. And I think that was a foundational thing. So I'm a huge fan of being homeschooled. It's become a lot cooler than when I was doing it. I mean, they would have like hoedown dances and stuff like the groups we were part of. Now there's like actually really cool branding and cool like moms are getting together with other moms and it's a cool thing now. At the time it was a little bit obscure, but I think we were fine with that.
How long did it take you? Like at what age did you get to when you said earlier when you were younger, you were like, I wish we could just be a little bit more normal. At what point did you go, man, I'm kind of glad for my abnormal background. It turns out God's using this.
Probably when I was 19 or 20. It took a few years. I went through the teenage angst, but the I don't want to be home anymore. I'm so glad I'm on tour phase of things. Mm-hmm. And then after you experience life a little bit and heartbreak a little bit, and you realize that you know, life can be difficult. I think I started realizing how grateful I was for my parents and my family, and helped walk me through a lot of dark times. You know, being on tour is not easy, you know, it was definitely fun, but not easy, you know, spiritually it's difficult. Physically you're just exhausted all the time. And so to come back home to a family that was fully behind me and praying for me, that was, you know, pretty essential to the success for me.
Well, you can see why so many artists have a tough time, as you describe some of the demands and difficulties of the touring life. Mm-hmm. You had all of this supportive family to back you up and be there for you, and an incredible spiritual heritage to build off of. You can see why so many folks get into trouble on the road. I'm sure you probably saw that with different bands that you'd cross paths with, where they don't have that network or heritage. And so all of a sudden, all the difficulties and not always great opportunities that come with road life hit them, and they're just not ready. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think the thing that we saw often was, you know, bands, when you're a teenager, you start a band, and some of those bands, you know, they'd get signed pretty quickly, and then, you know, if for Christian bands, you know, they were part of, they were the youth group band and they get signed and all of a sudden they're on tour and people are looking at them like they're the Christian leaders of our day. And I'm like, they barely graduated high school, myself included, you know? And so they'd be on tour and just feel very disconnected from church life. You know, for Skillet, we always thought of ourselves as a ministry that was being sent out from the church that we were a part of. And there's a tiny church in Kenosha, Wisconsin that, you know, 300 people there, but that was home, you know? And if our leaders were ever like, hey, you guys aren't healthy right now, you need to come back, we would be okay, let's do that. And most bands would say, no, I have to go pursue this other thing. And so, so for us, that was it gave us a safe haven to come back to, and to have people that could speak into our lives to say, hey, you're not doing well, you need to take a break. And we actually listened to that. That was a bit abnormal. We didn't see that much on tour.
You know, I didn't mention I was going to ask this question, so we may end up taking it out in post, but I would love to hear, as long as we're talking about church, and I think it's so cool that you guys had that like tethered connection to the local church while you were out doing your thing. What's, you've gone on, and we'll talk about Skies Fall a little bit later, but you've gone on to be part of all kinds of different endeavors. What's your connection with the local church look like these days?
Yeah, it's interesting. During COVID, everything kind of blew up. But when we moved out to LA, this was 6-7 years ago, and it came actually through a prophetic word that somebody gave us. This lady that I barely knew came up to me while we lived in Wisconsin, and she very clearly and specifically said, "You're going to move out to California, and you're going to go to this church called Expression 58." And we, you know, kind of backburnered that. You know, prophetic can be awesome, and also sometimes it can be a little bit weird, and so. Yeah. But, you know, 6 months later, we finally visited that church and my wife and I immediately walked in and it was like, oh my gosh, this is home. And so, so when we came out here, you know, it's a whole other world coming from the Midwest and going to a city like LA that's very transient. I think the average time people live here is 18 months.
Wow.
And you experience that in church life where people are like, hey, I got this gig and hey, I haven't gotten a gig in a year. I'm out of money going back home. It's a very strange place in that way. And so, you know, for us, we got really plugged into this church, and really with like the worship team and the leadership, and that kind of, they kind of became our people. And then through COVID, everything kind of shut down and most churches in California weren't meeting because they weren't allowed to. And so we stopped going like on Sundays, and church became more like community, family around the table type of experiences. And now we're part of a church called Vintage Malibu, and some friends of ours pastor that. And it's amazing, but it's definitely it's a different place. But the fundamentals of church life, as far as like gathering, you know, as a congregation, worshiping, hearing the word, and then meeting in small groups around a table, around a meal, they're essential to, you know, to our kind of survival. And so it's kind of evolved from like the traditional looking thing to something more like, let's choose to do life together. There's a couple couples that we do life. We just said, let's do life together. Like let's, through thick and thin and highs and lows and success and non-success, like let's show up for each other. And that's become, you know, there's kind of a variation of our church. But as far as local church, Vintage Malibu is where we call home.
Well, I love that. I mean, I think that the kind of relationships you're describing are what we're all made for and I think long for, but I think it's really cool in the midst of all of the amazing stuff you're doing and you're in LA and all the things, and yet you're still saying, hey, we want to be rooted. We want to have a local church connection. I think we're, you know, just in a time and era where people kind of go, yeah, I'm just going to call whoever I hang with. Like, that's my church. And
right.
And it's tough because I like have a huge value for the kind of relationships you described. But I also go, when I look at the Bible, local churches are more than just those relationships. And it sounds like you're doing a great job, just kind of the balance of the two. I'd love to talk for a minute about you leaving Skillet. And you already alluded to this, but I want to flesh it out a bit more, because here you are. You're a Grammy-nominated band. You've sold a zillion albums, all the things. I mean, it's like, you know, you're living the dream. What for you really pushed you over the edge of it's time to walk away from this? How did that discernment process work to say it's time to make a really big transition from something that was very successful?
Yeah, great question. You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking back and reminded of many times when you're on tour, you look around at each other, the other people in the band, and you ask, like, should we still be doing this? Like, this is really hard and exhausting. And many times I remember having conversations with Corey, who was our keyboardist. And, you know, John and Corey, they were both about 10 years older than me when I joined. And so, you know, I joined at 16. So they kind of became my parents on tour and very, you know, heavily involved in discipling me and kind of raising me in a lot of ways. And so, you know, oftentimes I'd have those conversations where if I'd go through something, I'm like, should I just get off tour? And I remember Corey's like, you know, find out like what's the assignment from God? Like, what is that thing? You know, and maybe there's more to be done. And, you know, I think when I started going back and being more plugged into our local church, I think I just missed that because of not having that for pretty essential times in my life. And so I remember, you know, and at the time I just started Skies Fall, this is like the last few years of being in the band. And I remember coming back, working with our worship school, teaching on that, and just coming alive, helping the church however it could, really coming alive. And they'd be like, oh my God, kind of dreading going back on tour. And I was like, that was like being self-aware of that. I'm like, that's really interesting. And then when I was on tour, I remember, you know, we'd go headline Creation Festival and literally you're playing in front of 100,000 people. And it was cool and a cool experience. But I remember getting off the stage and going back to the bus and like designing a business card for Skies Fall that I had started on the side and being more passionate about that. And I was like, this is very, very strange. And so my last big tour with the band, I remember being, it was awesome. It was like Australia, New Zealand, Japan, you know, like this world tour. And I sent an email to one of our pastors and I just said, I think I want to do something else. And I got the entrepreneurial bug of, you know, owning my own business and, you know, kind of getting involved with different aspects of that, which I didn't really have that experience within Skillet. Within Skillet, I was a guitarist and it was like, be the best guitarist you possibly can,
right?
You know, hone in that craft, show up on stage for shows, et cetera, et cetera. I knew that God called me to more than that. And I knew that my time with Skillet was limited. I was actually shocked that I stayed in the band for 10 years, not because I didn't want to, but early days of being in the band, I remember having a dream. And in that dream, I was not in the band and I was watching them on TV. And there was this sense of like being so happy for them. Mm-hmm. And even though I wasn't in the band anymore, and I was like, that was a strange dream to have 2 or 3 years being into the band. And, you know, in the end I did it for another 10 or 7 years, but, you know, I don't know if that answered your question, but
yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting experience for sure.
Well, I feel like, and even already coming back to the psalm you showed at the beginning, when you're really going after God, trusting him with all you have, and then your desires shift, there is a certain sense in which you can listen to those heart's desires. And so you were finding your passions were shifting. And, you know, on the one hand, like pastorally, at times I'm talking with folks and I'm like, hey, be careful of being overly sensitive to your passions. But where we can be really tuned into them is when our hearts are locked in with, I just want to follow Jesus 100%. My life is yours. I want you to be my first delight. And then we start sensing our heart shifting or our passion shifting. That's something to pay attention to. And it sounds like you did. Overall, one of the themes that I love that comes out whenever you're in a conversation like this is just your overall sensitivity to the Holy Spirit. You're open to kind of the prophetic gifting. I just think it's obviously you've already talked about your parents kind of creating that atmosphere as you were growing up. I would love for you just to expand a little bit on that today. I don't know if everybody, you know, when they think of people in the entertainment industry and successful in the marketplace, all the things, they're necessarily would imagine somebody like you being as in tune with the Holy Spirit as you are. Tell me what your journey with the Holy Spirit looks like. How does that play out on a day-to-day basis? I'd love to just for our listeners to understand that better.
Yeah, I mean, I think because of growing up the way that I did, you know, hearing the Holy Spirit, feeling the Holy Spirit, being led by him in decision making, that was ingrained in me from a young age. I've had to learn, you know, like I remember the early days of trying to figure out like what's the Holy Spirit, what's just me. You know, and I think now that I'm, you know, 40, almost 41 years old now, like I've walked with God enough through the highs and lows where like kind of his voice, you know, it's that whole idea of like the sheep will know his voice, like kind of have a better sense of that, you know. And I think, you know, especially in endeavors like entrepreneurial endeavors, you know, that's something I've thought about often, talk about often, is like, you know, I'm willing to go for it in things. One of the principles my dad taught me early days was like, you know, in kind of pursuing things, how do you know it's right? And he's like, well, just treat it like it's a green light, unless it's not a green light, unless it's a red light. Mm-hmm. It was such a simple thing, but I often find people, Christians, get so hung up and have so much fear about doing the wrong thing that they end up not doing anything. And there's that story of the talents where, you know, it was the person that actually hid his talents that was kind of punished for that. And what he was given was taken away because he was like, well, I was so afraid that the master is, you know, it was all fear based. And when mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of Christians, you know, that can often be the case, you know, and we can get so fixated on and careful, which I think it's very good to be careful and surrendered and submitted. But, you know, you look at Abraham and he was asked to sacrifice Isaac. And I think there's this idea of like, okay, you need to die to your flesh. You need to give this up, like surrender the dream. And I think you do need to, everybody needs to go through that process. But at the end of that process, you know, he didn't sacrifice his son, right? Like he actually, and he raised his son and he became this great leader. I think Christians sometimes sacrifice, but they never kind of finish out the like, and maybe God wants to bring that back. And maybe because you surrendered it, you have the purity of heart to actually go pursue that thing. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes people, they hide and it's out of fear of failing, fear of doing the wrong thing. And so for me, I've just always been somebody that's like, I want to go for it, right? Like life is short. I want to go change the world. I want to get involved with, you know, I started a record label. I was involved with music. I want to make a film. I want to get involved with all these things because it's like God's given us the earth to make something of it. It has all this potential built into it. And he, you know, he told Adam and Eve, like, go make something of this earth to bring out its potential. And so I feel, you know, my call is to do that both personally and with my wife, but then also to encourage other people. And so, you know, what that often looks like is, well, what do you want to do, Pastor Brian? Like, well, I've always had this idea to start a coffee shop. And one of my spiritual gifts, I don't know what it's called exactly, but it's maybe the gift of faith to say like, hey, you should go do that. And here's steps to get there. And here, meet this person. He actually wants to invest in something like that. You know, that excites me more than anything. And but it's not, you know, I'm constantly getting yellow lights and red lights. My wife is constantly like, are you sure you should be doing that? Is that really what? And I'm like, oh yeah, got ahead of myself on that one. And so I'm not perfected in that, but I'm constantly saying like, okay, God, what do you, and just listening, like we know that still small voice, you know, if you're getting off track mm-hmm. and if you're in as a whole, if your life is surrendered and your day to day is like, God, what are you saying? What do you want to do? If that's your heart posture, then go for it, right? Because if your heart is truly surrendered along the way, he's gonna guide you. You're asking for wisdom. He's gonna give you wisdom. And he's not gonna let you go down the wrong road. He's gonna, you know, just like a shepherd, he's gonna bring you back to the fold as needed. And sometimes, you know, that happens. And sometimes it's like, God's like, no, go for it. Run hard.
I love that perspective on just who he is as a father and as a shepherd, because I just could not resonate more with what you're saying about discerning the Lord's voice, but ultimately kind of defaulting to, hey, if I have a burden or a passion in my heart, erring on the side of pursuing it versus being in this place where I need 5,000 confirmations and I need the clouds to part and I need all these different things. I do think I've had times in my life when I've been that way. I feel like that's like the kind of the Moses example where he was really, I need this and I need this and I need this. And I feel like as I've grown in faith, I need less and less. Like I sense, like you're saying, a prompt and I just know, man, that feels like it's from the Lord and I move on it versus now I need 15 different confirmations. But I love the idea of he's a good father. And so as you're saying, if that's the case and he is actually like, man, that's not the path, as a good father, a good shepherd, he's going to speak up and help you discern that before you end up shooting yourself in the foot. Now, let's say we're in that posture of more of a posture of assuming that this is a good desire, passion, or vision in our heart, and we should go after it. When you talk about the yellows and the red, you know, red lights, and you already mentioned this kind of with your wife might speak in, how do those typically present for you? When are the times or what are the usual prompts that you go, hey, maybe I need to slow down here. This might not be the thing for this time.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes for me, it's a feeling of a, it's, I mean, it's the, what do we call it in the, yeah, it's like a red, it's a red flag. It's like your spirit kind of just has a hesitation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've grown to know that that's the Holy Spirit just saying, hey, slow down. You know, it's almost like this stress feeling in my heart, in my spirit, where I'm like, something's off here, mm-hmm. you know, and I've learned by ignoring that and being like, it'll be fine. It's fine. How could this not be the right opportunity? It makes so much sense on paper. Yeah. And I go down the road and it falls apart, or it, you know, doesn't look like what it was, I thought it was going to look like, or, you know, whatever the reason, right? Like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I knew it, you know, months ago, but I ignored that. And then there's times I listen to that voice, and it's like saying no to something was like the most freeing thing ever. And I don't know the reason why God wanted me to say no, mm-hmm. but it's like when you operate, it's when you obey, there's like this pleasure that comes with it, right? That's just like, oh yeah, it's being led by the Spirit. And you know, I just have to believe that he's protecting me from something that, that I shouldn't be involved with. Right. Like, and it's like, I don't want to climb up the wrong mountain and spend all this time doing that, you know? And so I'm learning still that's like, hey, just, you know, when you feel that, for me, it's a feeling. For some people, mm-hmm. it's like you hear a voice, you hear thoughts in your head. For me, it's a feeling that I know and I've learned over time. And it's the same feeling. Like if I was going to go sin, it's like I would know that conviction of the Spirit. It's the yeah. same type of feeling as that for me anyway.
Yeah. Well, and to come back to something you said earlier, for those listening who are maybe on the earlier side of journeying with being sensitive to the Holy Spirit, you really do get better the longer you're trying to stay tuned in to what the Holy Spirit's saying. You get better and better at hearing his voice clearly and going, oh, that's God. That's what it feels like when God speaks to me. And so I really want to encourage those who are listening, you know, keep at it and keep listening. And some of it's trial and error. Honestly, like any relationship, I'm sure that you would say about your wife, and I know I would with mine, like I've gotten mm-hmm. better at understanding where she's at, how to read certain things, how to read sure. a certain tone of voice, even just a look. But yep. all of that's gotten sharper over time.
Yep. We're figuring it out. That's
right
sure.
on. So Skies Fall, I really want to encourage people to check out the website, because it's so, what you guys do is so multifaceted, it's hard to even describe, you know, because you just have your hands in a lot of different pots and you provide a lot of different services for your clients. And so it's really fun to just jump on the website and you get to see all at least some of the cool things you guys have been up to. I would love, on the whole journey of starting something, you're already kind of working on the company then while you're still in the band. And then you go full on, you end up moving to LA because you felt like that's where God was calling you to go. But talk to me a little bit about the journey of starting the company, of going like, all my eggs are in this basket. What was that like? Was it easy? Was it hard? How did you experience God in the whole startup process?
Yeah, it's interesting. Looking back, you know, I started the company with a guy named Joe Snyder, who was at the time, he was just one of my best friends at the church we were part of. He was kind of busy pursuing his own, you know, business with his father-in-law. And we would just get together and hang out and be like, you know, it'd be cool as, you know, record label. And, you know, it'd be cool as, you know, films that do this, and it's kingdom culture. You know, we just started kind of dreaming and talking. And, you know, through that, at one point, you know, at that time, he was way more experienced in business than I was. And I was just the kind of creative guy that was dreaming big. And anyway, so we were like, let's just start a company and see where it goes. I don't even remember praying about it. It was just like this natural progression. Mm-hmm. But so much of the formation of that and the foundation of that was based on just kingdom principles and kingdom culture. There's a guy named Lance Wall now who he had this, you know, I think it was called like Doing Business Supernaturally or something like that. And it was this course that we took. It was all about like the seven mountains of culture and how, you know, there's government and, you know, education and the arts and entertainment and things like that. And, you know, as we create a culture in business that's based off of, you know, the kingdom and the Bible and the gospel, those principles and applying those to business, like we're going to see blessing and favor. And so every week we would get together and pray for the company and just genuinely expect God to just show up in some kind of way. And I remember specifically we were only doing music at the beginning, and one day we prayed and we're like, I feel like we're supposed to buy some video cameras. We bought a few video cameras. And literally that week we got phone calls from you know, a nearly billion-dollar apparel company that lived in the town we were at, and they were like, "Hey, we heard you guys do video," and we're like, "How did you know? That's weird." And so all of a sudden, we have this, you know, this client that we're doing work for, and we ended up doing commercials for Target and Jockey, Intel, GE Healthcare. Like, we started doing this stuff in the video world that we really had no business doing, to be honest. But we were just good people, dreaming big, following after God, and praying for the company. And so that was going on, you know, while I was in the band. It was like, I think that's why there was a big shift for my heart, where I was like, I was seeing the kingdom being built in through business, and through a business that I owned. And so that transition, it was hard in one sense to leave, because I was like, man, I kind of left like shortly after, looking back, it was like just after Skillet was at their top, right? It was like, we sold the most amount of records, had the most amount of success. And so, you know, some people maybe thought I was crazy, or they're like, why would you leave now? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been doing it for 10 years. So, but kind of landing in a safe church where we feel like we had community, people that loved me, and then seeing anytime I put my hand to something, God was blessing that in the business world, which is different for me. I was creative. So to then be hearing God speak, or, you know, putting desires in my heart in the same way that I knew it in the kind of the ministry and creative space. Now it was in business. And I was like, this is weird. I didn't know you could hear God in business. So that was a cool thing that I, you know, ultimately just became obsessed with.
Did you, it seems like you had a very, I mean, honestly, just a very favored kind of on-ramp to the whole experience of Skies Fall, including some of those ways that God was showing up with early opportunities that were really out of your league, and here's God dropping some things into your lap. Were there many difficulties or obstacles on the front end, or was it just, wow, this is just up and to the right, and business is falling into our laps, and, you know, our biggest problem is how do we manage all the opportunity? I mean, was there tough stuff or not really?
I should share more of the horror stories of it all too, right? And the failed projects and the things that break and the clients that weren't happy and all, you know, within the midst of what I would say is like experiencing God's favor in business, you know, we're like, you start hiring people because you're like, hey, we're growing quickly. So now all of a sudden we have 10 employees, and that means 10 people we're paying every month. And we get, okay, now we have to get work. Now it's not just that's fun and nice. It's like we got to meet payroll, and you're dealing with personalities and creative personalities that are interesting. Creatives, being one, are very interesting people and can be highly emotional. And so, you know, while we saw God's favor in all of it, and it was a fun experience, definitely tons of work, super hard, not easy, you know, letting people go, difficult, like, so many things along the way were difficult. And I think for me, it was the foundational knowing. I think there was a desire that I knew that this was still, even though we were seeing success in it, it was like a stepping stone, because we were working with brands mostly when we started Skies Fall. So we're doing like commercials and some music videos. That was cool. We were like kind of cutting our teeth on that. But in my heart was like, I want to go pursue film. Like, I want to go make a movie or a television show. And I really had no idea how to do that or what the business of that looked like. I remember the first time I went to LA trying to shop a film project, and just completely green and ignorant. And, you know, hey, pick me. I'm here. Like, I have an idea for a movie, you know? And so, you know, but that was in my heart when I was doing these music videos and commercials. And so it was like, that was the thing that I'm like, the work's, like, the assignment is not done yet. I felt like with Skillet, I knew at a young age that I was going to be a part of something like that, and was just blown away by the success of it and the impact that it had. And it was like that same kind of seed dream idea I had with film and television. And I'm still kind of outworking that, to be honest.
Which will be a great segue in a second to Homestead. But let me just want to appreciate you, you know, kind of taking note of some of the challenges, because it really is. Sometimes I'll talk to folks and they're so, and it's, I think it comes from a good place. They're so aware of God's favor on their journey that they can talk about, man, God showed up this way and this way and this way. But I think it's really good for any of us who are out there trying to do a new thing to recognize, oh yeah, it's going to be challenging. You're going to have to learn a ton. Even with all the success of Skillet, you'd never led a multi-staff person company before. So you're growing as a leader, as a manager. That's a whole different skill set. that you're having to develop in a new way and face some of the challenges that come with dealing with team members and all the things. So I just think it's great to hear that some of those challenges along the way. Let's spend a minute talking about Homestead. I mentioned this to you before we started the conversation officially, but my wife and I were able to see it. Loved the movie. Loved the idea. I know you've gotten a little bit of pushback on the idea of taking the movie right into a, hey, and we've got a TV series coming off of this. To me, I thought this is A, brilliant, and B, this is the kind of idea that it's not, to my knowledge at least, not been done before. And so they're going to be, some people are going to be like, oh my gosh. And then when it's successful, they're going to be like, those guys are brilliant. We should all be doing this. So I love that you innovated and tried something new. But yeah, tell me a little bit about the backstory of the project. And maybe you could give us a little bit of a sneak peek of here of what Homestead's about and what your experience has been like with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll rewind a little bit. So it was probably about 2 years ago. My wife and I were, you know, running our agency and production company in Los Angeles. And to be honest, pretty exhausted. We were living closer to the city in Studio City. And so we were like, let's move out of the city. Let's get to, you know, like literally there's like goats and chickens across the street from us now. Like we're within 40 minutes of LA, but now it's just a different vibe. And so, but we were coming out here and I remember walking through this house that we live in now. And thinking it's time to slow down. It's going to be, let's start. We don't have kids yet. Let's start a family. Let's, you know. And then I get a phone call from, you know, kind of a new friend of mine who was an author and a very, very successful business guy. And he was basically like, hey, I think I've got this book series. It's a best-selling book series called Black Autumn. I want to turn this into a television show. What do you think? And my life has been nonstop ever since, probably the busiest I've ever been. So our season of rest and recruitment didn't happen then. But you know, it was interesting. We met Angel Studios. I met this author. It was like the collision of all these incredible people coming together. And I was there at the table as a filmmaker and as a producer saying, hey, I want to help this thing, you know, come into existence. And so started as a television show. And then sure enough, this, I don't know if you know, but the SAG strike happened. So like all SAG actors, like any major actor, most actors are SAG. And it's a union, and they were striking, and so you couldn't make something. But they were approving kind of like independent films to get made. And I was like, well, what if we took episode 1 and 2 of the TV show and turned it into a feature film? And at that time, Angel Studios had released Sound of Freedom that did very, very well. And they started to like do things more theatrically. And we're like, they're starting to get good at that. Let's see if we can jump on that bandwagon. Because what a great way to market a television show with a massive kind of launch, you know, in theaters. And, you know, right. Like you said, we had never really seen that before. And so we were like, either this is genius and I don't know why people haven't done it, or there's a big reason why people haven't done that. And I thought as a viewer, like, I don't know how many times I've watched a movie and you get so invested emotionally in these characters and then it ends and you're like, oh, that was, you know, I'm sad. Like, I want to keep watching this. And so we thought it was really smart and I thought audiences would love it. Like you said, we got a lot of pushback from people like, hey, you just did the movie to market a TV show and I feel ripped off. And I was so shocked by the response because I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of it that way. I just thought, hey, the story keeps going. How cool is that? You know, so yeah. A little surprised by that. But you know, it was an amazing experience. It was our first time making a feature film. We've done tons of commercials, tons of short films. But you know, raising $5 million, you know, creating something like that was an incredible opportunity and an amazing journey. And, you know, it did well. It released this past Christmas and did really well. But I mean, it was God's stories all throughout it, to be honest. A miracle that it all came together. You know, I'll share one brief story on it. You know, it's very difficult to raise money for films and television. A lot of people have lost a lot of money. And so you're trying to differentiate yourself in any kind of way. And anyway, very long story short, you know, it was probably a week before we were meant to start filming. And, you know, in short, there was a fund that backed out of financing. So within a couple days here, it's like, we need $2 million in the next like 72 hours, or we're going to have to like cancel this whole thing. And at the time my wife was going through a bit of a health scare, had to go fly back to LA to have surgery. And it was like this collision of all these things of like, it was like faith being tested in a way that I've never experienced before. We're literally, I'm in the production office and there's you know, 70 people hurriedly running around trying to get everybody. We're filming. They're excited. We're filming. In the back of my mind, I'm like, I literally might have to fire them tomorrow. And nobody, like two people knew this, right? And so it was like me on my face before God saying, like, yeah, you brought me here. Like, I'm not even the one that, this is just his story. Like, I'm along for the ride. You got to show up, God. And even though it was very difficult, and with my wife's health, it was very difficult, I was just like, for some reason, I believe God's going to show up. And sure enough, like within 72 hours, we had two financing offers. My wife ended up having surgery. Everything was, you know, fine. It was all good. And then all of a sudden we were making the film. But it was like, and that was, you know, great adventure in and of itself. But I remember passing the faith test and seeing God show up and believing him for that. And I was like, that was actually the most exhilarating thing in the whole experience, was just like having like the test of faith, you know? And so Super grateful for, you know, amazing. Like, a lot of people don't get to make movies. A lot of people don't get to make movies that go out into theaters, let alone a television show as well. So I'm just so grateful that we got the opportunity to tell a story. And on the creative, I know I'm yakking, but on the creative standpoint, so it's a feature film that leads into a television show based on a best-selling book series. It's a military thriller. And, you know, we kind of tweaked it a little bit, so it's more like a drama, you know, post-apocalyptic family drama. And, you know, basically a nuclear bomb goes off in Los Angeles, and it's all these families kind of coming together in the Rocky Mountains trying to survive in the midst of a collapse of society. And so, you know, they're turning to nature, they're turning to God, they're turning against each other. It's figuring out how do you survive in the midst of something. And I think we saw glimpses of that during COVID, where you know, all of a sudden, you know, I remember going to the grocery store and there's literally nothing in the freezer sections of our grocery store. I'm like, what is happening? You know? And so, you know, it felt like a timely story to tell. And so very grateful that we got to do that.
Yeah, I love, you know, the overall apocalyptic genre is cool in the sense that it really causes you to enter into these stories and say, what would I do? What would we be like? Would we be ready? How would we respond to some of the tensions that you're raising in the film? And I don't want to give people a preview. I want them to watch it, but it really does raise a lot of those kind of ethical tensions. And even as a Christ follower, what is the right response in these scenarios? And so I just loved how you guys are really wrestling with hard questions. And it's not like this nice little, you know, button it up real nice and easy kind of a way. You feel the tensions of what the characters are wrestling with. I think it's awesome. I love, though, the idea that when you're talking about that faith, that faith test on the front end with the financing, and it's funny because you'd think, okay, we're going, it's green light, you know, this is that we're living the dream. And I have been in those moments specifically with different projects where financing has fallen out last minute, or we've gotten massive unwelcome surprises. And I would agree with you, those moments of being on the very edge of faith where you know you cannot materialize $2 million on your own strength in that amount of time. This is beyond you. All you can do is lean on God. And then when he shows up, it's just the most fantastic thing ever to go, look what God did. He's capable. He's present. He sees all this. I think that's a fantastic story. I've got to ask, though, having now the film's out, it's done well. I mean, you said it costs $5 million to make, $20 million. More than $20 million it's brought in so far. So that's great. The first couple episodes are getting streamed. Would you do over the movie to TV with the learnings you've had? Do you go, yep, hands down, I would do it all over again? Or do you go, well, maybe would have thought about that a little bit more?
I would do it again for sure. Yeah. I think we would, you know, creatively, we would tweak some things. You know, we're actually working on a couple other projects, and we're using the same strategy because, again, we spent $8, $10 million on marketing. So it's like a lot of people are familiar with the brand of Homestead now. Yeah. And that's going to open up a lot of doors for the series to go, you know, to go for a long time. And so I love it, you know, but you know, everything you do, there's lessons that you learn along the way. And, but I think Angel sees it as a great success. We've heard other big studios are actually looking at doing that as well now. So, you know, I think there was some success in it. I think we have to make audiences more aware of the fact that it's a television show as well. Yeah. I think going in when they go in, and but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I like I said before, I think it's brilliant. I think you guys took a risk. I think that it's funny because the way that the way that the movies and TV have been so bifurcated historically. You know, it's TV over here, it's movies over here. And now with so many movies and big time actors launching either TV expand, you know, I forget what they would call them, but like long, you know, expanded TV series, things they can accomplish that they can't accomplish in a movie format, or just straight movie formats being launched right on different like streaming platforms and bypassing the theaters altogether. I just think this like convergence is really cool. And I think you guys made sense of it. And it does not surprise me in the slightest that other people are thinking, hey, you know what? Maybe there is some gold here. So that's awesome. I love that you're going to probably have a legacy in the whole establishment because of the risk this movie took that was just a small budget affair and people are taking notice. Overall, you've been someone who is comfortable clearly with taking risks and even failing. Talk to me a little bit about this tension that exists between faith and fear and risks and failure and what your position is on that. How do you navigate it?
Yeah, good question. You know, there's a question, conversation I've had the last few weeks with another friend of mine. And there was a question that, I don't know if it was like a Tony Robbins, but somebody like that. It was probably somebody more, you know, Christian than that. But he said, you know, what would you do or what would life look like if you were 10 times more bold or had 10 times more courage? And that question, it's like kind of, I don't know if it haunts me, but it's like, oh man, I think it inspires me. And it challenges me because I'm like, you know, what would you do, right? Like, okay, I feel like I'm a pretty, like I'm a go-getter. I'm like, hey, let's go. I have no problem. Like, oh, that's the CEO of a studio. Like, let's go talk to him. Like, let's see what God does. And I'm expectant of that, you know? What would I be doing if I was 10 times more like that? And it's like, I almost saw it as like an invitation to believe God for more. I remember telling another friend, you know, I joined Skillet when I was 16. I was like a homeschool kid, very normal, even though I was a little abnormal, pretty normal, pretty like okay at the guitar. There's lots of guitar players that were better than me, but I believed God that he wanted to use me in a big way. And I was like expectant of that. And so, and you know, Skillet went on to be one of the biggest Christian rock bands, you know, ever. Right. And so grateful for that, but it was like, it almost ruined me to the ordinary. To where it's like, okay, we're going to go make a movie. I'm like, I want to make a movie that goes into theaters. Like life is short. Let's go play in the Olympics. Not literally, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Let's believe God. If God can do anything, like, am I going to believe God for, you know, something, you know, mid-size, or am I going to believe God for something big? And I was like, well, you might as well. It takes just as much faith. Like, it's faith, right? Like, to believe God for the big thing. Let's go after that. Doesn't mean there's not fear. Doesn't mean there's not uncertainty, doubt. You know, I'm constantly questioning, you know, the industry is like this weird thing where it's like, we just had this film come out in theaters and then now there's this lull and I'm waiting to get greenlit for the next two seasons of Homestead. You know, you're sitting at home and you're like, what am I doing? Should I be doing something else with my life? Maybe I should start a company. What if this doesn't come through? You start having those negative thoughts and you're like, man, but you just have to remember, like, ultimately, God is the one that opens the doors, you know, so we work hard, we prepare ourselves. And then, you know, there's another guy that said, you know, basically God, like, expect God to put the super on the natural. So we want to live supernatural lives, but like, God's the one that has to put that super on the natural. The expectation is that the natural kind of has its act together. You know what I mean? Like, if you have this dream to go play NBA, you know, ball, like, but you're not practicing every day. It's like, well, God can't open that door. You're not ready for that door to be opened. If the door opened for you, you would fail miserably because you didn't have that, the natural in order. And so there's something about that that's been like a principle in life where it's like, I believe that if I get the natural in order and I practice or I become excellent, going back to the learning, like learning how to learn, like learn how to pursue something and become excellent at it and then see what God does. And oftentimes in my life, and I believe like this is for others too, that like when you perfect something or you become excellent in something that God's like, okay, I can use that now. And, you know, there's that verse in Proverbs that says, you know, play skillfully and you'll be brought before kings.
Right.
I'm like, I'm literally expecting that like that. I'm like, I haven't met the president yet, but I'm like, I should meet the president. Like, I'm going to believe God that I'm going to meet the president. Cause like, why not? Like, because if I play skillfully at whatever the thing is God's put in my hand, like, that's what the verse says, right? So, so I'll keep you posted on that whenever that happens. But
I love it.
You know, I don't know. I'm kind of long-winded here, but I just want to encourage people.
This is gold. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, keep going.
People, I just want to encourage people to, like, believe God for big things. There's a reason why God puts something in your heart. It's not just your thoughts, right? Like, you've always had this desire to go do something. Start a coffee shop. I used to help people. Like, I'd teach at this school, and I would make everybody write out a list of these top 10 things. These are the 10 things I want to do in my life. And it's like, it can be as selfish as you want, whatever. Just put 10 things in your life. And it's like, you know, people are, at first Christians are like, well, I want to help save kids in Africa. And you're like, do you actually want to do that? Or are you just saying that because you're supposed to say that as a Christian? And it's like, okay, fine. You know, I remember this one girl was like, I want to build a bicycle. And she was so embarrassed to say that. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. She's like, why am I so, I'm like, you should do that. Like, that's so, and so I think there's like this, there's this power in recognizing these are the things that God's put in your heart and that God actually put those desires in your heart. And as you delight yourself in God, he puts those desires there and then he's going to meet those desires. And our job is to step out in faith and believe him for that. And it is scary, but I think as we take steps, you know, the doors start opening or closing and you have to hold it loosely, right? You dream big. And at the same time you go like, if it doesn't work out, like it's not failure. It's just, what's the lesson in this, God? And what's the next thing?
Well, and that's I love that idea of failing forward in general and not reading failure or things that don't work out as, oh my goodness, you know, this is terrible. My life's over. I messed up. And for those of us who are like me, who are Enneagram ones and perfectionists, you know, you take it all the harder. And saying, no, this is another path, another step forward. It just is, I mean, it's not the fun kind of step forward, but it is still a step forward. And so far as you learn from it, that question, how would you live, or I forget exactly how you worded it, but how would you do things differently if you were 10 times bolder? That is going to stick with me for the rest of my life. I love that so much. And I just so appreciate you sharing that. And I was thinking as you were talking about that great Hall of Faith chapter in Hebrews chapter 11, where it's listing all of these people who God used to do great things. And they all had a vision, a picture, a calling that was so much bigger than what would make any kind of sense to hold. And in many cases, they didn't get all the way there, but what we both could say is hands down, they only got as far as they did, which was still massive. Like God used them all in huge ways because they had a vision that was so just gigantic. So I think that's such a beautiful point and beautifully said. It's going to inspire people. I'd be curious, you're clearly a driven person. You're on the go. You're like, what's the next thing? How do you keep yourself in a place of, there's a tension, I feel like sometimes for me, of like, I'm wired similarly, like I want to get after it. How do you mind that tension of getting after it with not letting that turn into a spirit of striving that's like, I want the next thing, the next level, the whatever, and kind of a contentment in the Lord and waiting? Do you feel that tension much in your life?
Yeah, often. Yeah, I mean, I'm learning how to navigate that. You know, I think the thing that comes to mind is like in the midst of pursuits, like doing a temperature check on like how am I actually doing, and is the fruit in my life not just in business and in career? Is the fruit in my life like, yeah, my marriage is awesome, and yeah, my relationships with family and friends is healthy, and spiritually I feel full, I don't feel depleted. You know, like when you kind of temperature check, you know, that's a helpful gauge. You know, I had a mentor recently that was saying, you know, I was like, what's going on in your life? I was asking him, and he's like, yeah, he had this book that came out recently and they were just crazy promoting that and all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, we're taking some time off. And I was like, oh, that's so good. He's like, yeah. And the word that God spoke to him was about basically allowing the land to heal. And this idea that, you know, when we're, I'm not a farmer, but let's just say I was, you know, like every year there has to be this season of time where the land heals, because you can't plant in it, you know, 24/7, 352 days a year. Like you have to allow the soil to rest. And anyway, I thought it was such a beautiful picture of like making sure that you're taking Sabbath, making sure that, you know, and you're letting the land rest. And when you do that, I think it allows you to kind of gauge like what is the right pursuit. You know what I mean? Like right mm-hmm. now, because of the success of Homestead, like I'm getting a lot of phone calls. I'm getting emails like, hey, make my movie. And at first I was like, okay, trying to stay on top of it all. And then I was just like, this is actually too much. Like, God, what am I supposed to be doing? Right. Like, I don't want to get distracted by 10 projects when maybe what God's saying is just focus on this one for now. You know, I do have another one that's really exciting though. But you know, it's the striving thing is real, especially in a city of LA where, yeah. you know, everybody's hustling. That's the name of the game. You got to hustle and you get invited to like, oh, come to this party, you know, and you're like, I should go. Cause what if I meet somebody? And it's like, it's exhausting. Cause it's like, and you think that you have to make it all happen mm-hmm. and it's just like, not, it's not kingdom, right? Like it's not got like nothing amazing that happened in my life that God did. It was because I manipulated the situation. And I was like, well, I was strategically, I'm like, it was God opened a door and I happened to, and I'm working hard, but like it's God that's doing it. You know what I mean? So yeah. it kind of it's a quick reminder to like not strive. And I think when you strive, you realize that your health meter is not healthy. And then when you let go, it's like, oh, God can be like, okay, you're not like, he can open the door and he can raise the money or whatever the thing is, you know? And then that way it's great. Cause then he's the one that has to sustain it, not you. Cause you yeah. made it all happen, you know?
Man, that's such a great word. And it, in some ways it comes back to me, even when we're talking about the idea of when people feel anxiety about the future and taking risks and whatnot. And here's why, because I feel like that spirit of striving is in some ways it's driven by fear and anxiety. What if I miss out? What if I, you know, lose this opportunity? If I don't make that connection, that kind of thing. What I hear you saying is I want to operate from a place of rest and health to the best of my ability. And obviously, as you've already said, that doesn't mean we're not working hard. And I think all of us who are accomplishing things would say, oh, we are working hard. But if you're keeping your marriage, your friendships, your relationship with God in a healthy place, those are staying dialed in. Those are the big rocks of your life. And then you're kind of in this place of trust and rest in Him where you can say yes to things because you feel a peace about saying yes to things, not yes because I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't do this. It's, you know, and that's that striving mentality for me is that just low grade anxiety of, oh, what if I don't mm-hmm. versus this is my calling to say yes. I think that's such a very good word on that. Mm. When it comes to, people find out about the movie. I mean, we've already mentioned Angel Studios. That right now is the platform to see the movie, right? Is it going to be released on other streaming platforms or is it going to stay on Angel for indefinite future?
Yes, it'll be on, I can't say what, but it'll be on another platform or network that's big and you've heard of and you okay. know, all the things. So yeah, okay. that's in the works. But right now you can watch the movie and the two episodes on the Angel app and yeah. that's growing very quickly, which is exciting. And I can't remember if I mentioned it on the recording here or not, but we're going to go into filming the rest of season one this summer. So gearing
Let's
up
go.
Here to head back to Utah and hit production. So hopefully late summer, you'll have some new episodes to binge and they're awesome. I'm very excited about them. And I think we learned a lot in the film. I like the television show better than the film. I was like, we learned all the lessons and I felt like we got better and more exciting in that. And it's only going to get better from here. So.
You know, yeah. honestly, and I'm not just saying this, honestly, Ben, when the second episode finished, I thought, I feel like this whole storyline is at the sweetest part it's been so far. I mean, it felt Thank like, you. Okay, again, everything's been good to date. I'm not, no criticism there, but yeah. I felt like when episode two ended, I had this feeling of now we're starting to go some places that feel I don't know, just next level, I guess. So it doesn't, yeah, I guess I say you. That to say, it doesn't surprise me to say that you're feeling that that's going to be the case in the subsequent episodes. Really excited about that. Now I assume your other project that you're excited about that you referenced a minute ago is probably too early in the pipeline to say anything more about in this conversation.
We're in production on it. It's called Miracle. Okay. And it's a docu-series, like a really cinematic docu-series about supernatural occurrences that have happened. But then looking at it through the lens of science and medical research. So we have a Harvard doctor and her husband who they have an institute that studies these miracles and they do peer reviewed published papers about them. So they throw out a lot of cases, not because they weren't miracles, but from a science standpoint, you can kind of explain it away. But there's these cases where, you know, whether it's somebody dies or they have a brain, like even, you know, this guy, Josh Brown, who was, he's one of these medical researchers, you know, he had a, he's a brain scientist, literally has, you know, got scans. He's like, you have a tumor. And he was like, I know, like, this is a death sentence. I'm going to die in the next 6 months. And he started pursuing God and healing. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, he gets the scan again. And they're like, the tumor changed into scar tissue. There's no more tumor. So there's these crazy stories. So we're telling it in a really cinematic way. There's a whole, like, I don't want to call it a lifestyle brand because that sounds really cheesy. But we've got somewhat of a controversial character, but a creative director from Kanye West's circle is our creative director. And we're doing some really cool stuff because I was like, I want to wear a t-shirt that says miracle. I just think that's so cool.
Yeah.
So let's do that at the highest level. And then we've got a bunch of music artists like Phil Wickham and, you know, Natalie Grant, things like that. So there's a new thing. It's going to be on Angel as well. It'll be, in my opinion, like since The Chosen, there's not really been anything like as like mission minded as that or like ministry based, you know, but it's rad. I'm stoked on it. So that'll come out this summer.
Oh, that's this summer already. Man, that sounds incredible. I can't wait. We'd not subscribed to Angel before, but we missed the movie because we were traveling and just busy with holidays and didn't see it in the Homestead, that is, in the theater. So we subscribed to Angel for the sake of seeing Homestead and then the shows. And then we've seen actually some other stuff too, which is what's cool because there's all kinds of great material. Bonhoeffer's on there. There's a lot of good stuff, mm-hmm. and so it sounds like we're all set up to watch Miracle. That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Hey, anything else you want to share before we get off today, Ben?
I don't think so, man. Thanks so much for your time. It's great to meet you, and love what you guys are doing. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to share a bit.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. And if people want to find out more, we've already mentioned your company. Any other things you want to say as far as connecting with you or following your work?
Check us out on skiesfall.com, our Instagram. You can, you know, follow my wife, Caitlin. She's actually the one to follow. She keeps the world posted on all that we're up to. But lots more stuff in the pipeline and just trying to make content that really changes people's lives, encourages people, and is rad, you know, super cinematic, dramatic type stuff, action stuff. I'm like, let's keep going after that. So there's a lot of cool things that are going to be happening over the next year or two. So stay tuned on it all.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep getting the word out. And Ben, thanks so much for taking the time and hanging out. You are doing incredible work. And I know for younger folks who are just like kind of starting out in their journey to watch someone like you really get after things in an excellent way, not a cheesy way, not like, I mean, I know you talked about a low budget film, and of course, compared to the blockbusters, it's low budget, but still, you know, let's just say there are films out there that are being done on lower budgets and not as well. And you came in and you said, we're going to do this in a way that deserves and commands respect. And the storyline, the quality, the excellence, the music is great. So well done on all that. I cannot wait for your further work and really appreciate you joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate it.
Wow. What a great conversation with Ben. And I am going to remember that line for a long time. What would happen if we lived 10 times bolder? If you're a follower of Jesus, did you know you have every reason to be bold? It's so interesting because the early Christians were hiding. They were afraid. They were filled with anxiety after Jesus was crucified. But then after he rose from the dead, those same disciples who were hiding and trapped by fear exploded into the world with courage and boldness. Why? Because they knew Jesus had risen. And that risen, conquering, victorious Jesus was walking with them every day of their lives. And it meant that both in the victories and in the difficult times, they knew ultimately God would prevail. If you are a follower of Jesus, you have every reason to walk with courage and with boldness and with confidence, and to know that even in the so-called failures, you can fail forward. God will take every misstep, everything that doesn't quite turn out the way you hoped, even things that the world would call failures, and he can help you move forward through them. Well, if this has been a good conversation for you, it's been encouraging, please do rate and review us. It is a massive encouragement to our team to hear from you. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we have more incredible conversations on the way. And so until next time, just know you were made to advance.